OBGYN consultant Samantha Jennings is leading a tutorial session with residents Morgan Brown, Andrew Minows, and Julia Tider at Massachusetts General Hospital.
So, Morgan, it is your turn to present a case you found interesting to the rest of the group. What have you got for us today?
Well, last week I saw a 31-year-old woman in the 37th week of pregnancy, Mrs. Ellis, and found her case interesting. She presented to the ER with sudden onset of severe bitemporal headache and shortness of breath. She was in respiratory distress, which was made worse by lying flat, and reported that she felt as if she was drowning.
How had her pregnancy progressed up to then?
Until the onset of these symptoms, her pregnancy had been uncomplicated, with normal BP throughout. At her last prenatal visit, last week, her BP was 120 over 70, and her heart rate was 72. Since becoming pregnant, she has gained 17 kilos. Mrs. Ellis reported having no fever, cough, chest pain, back pain, nausea, vomiting, diplopia, visual symptoms, abdominal pain, contractions, or vaginal bleeding, but she did report reduced fetal movements.
Did she take any medication or suffer from other conditions?
Yes. She had hypothyroidism, for which she took levothyroxine, 150 micrograms daily, and she also had pernicious anemia. She had two previous pregnancies that ended in spontaneous abortion in the first trimester. She took 1 milligram of vitamin B12 intramuscularly, monthly, and prenatal vitamins. She had no known allergies and she did not smoke.
And what did your examination reveal?
Well, her BP was 180 over 110 when supine, equal in both arms. Her JVP was 15 centimeters H2O. Her heart rate was 120. I examined her heart and found a diffuse but non-displaced apical impulse, a summation gallop, and an apical holosystolic murmur, grade 2 over 6. She had no edema in her legs. Her respiration was 32. Her O2 sat 70% when breathing ambient air. Upon examining her chest, bibacillar rales, persisting with cough and deep breathing, were revealed. She presented normal reflexes, and her optic fundi was normal.
What about her abdominal examination?
It was normal, with mild contractions every 5 minutes. Her cervix was dilated by 1 centimeter and 80% effaced, with membranes intact. The fetal heart sounds were normal at 130.
So, Andrew and Julia, what do you make of it all? What would be your next step?
Well, I would run some blood tests, an FBC, as the high blood pressure is worrying, and I would want to determine the cause of it.
Julia, what do you think were the most likely etiologies for high blood pressure?
This late in the pregnancy, with no previous history of high blood pressure, I would say preeclampsia and gestational hypertension.
That's right. Chronic hypertension in pregnancy is defined as hypertension that is diagnosed before pregnancy or before 20 weeks of gestation. But our patient is far past it. Gestational hypertension is the onset of hypertension after 20 weeks of gestation that is not associated with proteinuria. So a blood test would indeed be indicated. Any other tests?
I think I would do an EKG as well.
That is exactly what we did, actually, and quite a few of Mrs. Ellis's results were abnormal. Her white cell count was high at 21,800 per millimeter cubed. Hematocrit was also high at 45%. Her creatinine kinase was at 1,353. Her troponin 1 at 23.3. The aspartate aminotransferase was at 74.
And what about the 24-hour urine sample for assessment of protein excretion?
It could not be obtained in this patient given her emergency situation, but we took a spot urine sample which showed a creatinine ratio of 4.27.
Well, given this result, I would say it is likely Mrs. Ellis's raised blood pressure was due to preeclampsia.
Yes. A spot urine sample showing a high protein to creatinine ratio is reasonably predictive of proteinuria, as measured with the 24-hour urine collection. We can conclude that Mrs. Ellis seemed to have preeclampsia, but there were other abnormalities to explain. What did her ECG show?
Poor R-wave progression and nonspecific ST-T-wave changes.
Julia, what do you make of that?
I think these findings are nonspecific and maybe variants of normal results, but do raise some concern about ischemic, myopathic, metabolic, or infiltrative disease of the myocardium. Since the patient's presentation suggests heart failure, I would recommend chest radiography with abdominal shielding to minimize fetal radiation exposure.
Very nice. Andrew?
I would obtain a transthoracic echocardiogram to rule out periperitoneal cardiomyopathy and other forms of cardiac disease, especially if the chest radiograph shows pulmonary edema.
Okay, good. I would add that the patient's hypertension and sudden onset of severe headache suggest rupture of a cerebral aneurysm, which is more common during pregnancy. This may be related to hormone-induced vascular remodeling. To exclude this possibility, it would be reasonable to perform a CT of the head.
We also raised the possibility of aortic dissection at the time, but the absence of chest or back pain in this patient made a diagnosis of aortic dissection unlikely.
What were the test results?
Well, the x-ray showed that the extent of the pulmonary vascular congestion in Mrs. Ellis was greater than what may normally develop in late pregnancy. The echocardiogram showed that the patient had global left ventricular dysfunction, with moderate left ventricular dilatation, and a left ventricular ejection fraction of 20%. She also had moderate mitral regurgitation, but her CT scan of the head was normal.
What do you think would be the most likely condition to explain Mrs. Ellis's depressed systolic function?
It could be acute MI, but although the patient's troponin level is high, her electrocardiogram is not suggestive of myocardial infarction.
Yes, I agree.
I can think of acute rheumatic fever.
That is less likely, the absence of fever and arthralgias.
I don't think it could be amniotic fluid embolism because of the presence of hypertension rather than cardiogenic shock and hypotension.
Good.
Systemic lupus erythematosus may cause cardiomyopathy, but this patient has no other symptoms to suggest lupus, so I don't think that's it. So that leaves me with peripartum cardiomyopathy.
Indeed. And remember that hypertension, especially preeclampsia, which this patient also appears to have, is a risk factor for peripartum cardiomyopathy. In one study, preeclampsia was present in 30% of patients with peripartum cardiomyopathy.
Am I right in remembering that subsequent pregnancies may be hazardous for patients with peripartum cardiomyopathy?
That's correct. Now, if the working diagnosis was pulmonary edema as a result of severe preeclampsia, complicated by peripartum cardiomyopathy, how would you have stabilized the patient's condition?
I would give her intravenous labetalol, hydralazine, furosemide, and administer bilevel positive airway pressure.
Morgan, is that what you did? And what happened to the patient after you administered the treatment?
Yes, that is the treatment plan we followed. We also administered magnesium sulfate, and the patient had a good clinical response to treatment. Postpartum, her leukocytosis and proteinuria resolved, and the previously elevated levels of serum creatine kinase and troponin normalized. Another echocardiogram obtained before the patient was discharged revealed mild improvement in left ventricular function and an estimated ejection fraction of 30 to 35%. The patient was discharged with prescriptions for digoxin, lisinopril, and metoprolol succinate and was scheduled for a follow-up visit in the cardiology department 2 weeks later, which would be next week. At the time of discharge, Mrs. Ellis felt physically well, her blood pressure was 95/60, and her heart rate was 99 beats per minute.